Yeah, absolutely true. I know in... Wow. Sorry, we had some thunder.
If someone calls you twice within 3 minutes...
Wow.
Did you hear it?
I did.
Is the End User, episode 109 for Friday, September 28th, Nuclear Beer. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective, The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am dissatisfied iPhone 4 user, Taylor Marr.
Wait, why are you dissatisfied?
Well, because there's an iPhone 5 now.
Ah, I see. I thought you meant the phone that you were using was actually not treating you well.
I was incredibly content with it up until November 10th or September 10th, and then it was all downhill from there.
All downhill from there. All because of a new iPhone announcement.
That's right, which we talked about last week. But now it's here. It's here, sort of. I haven't seen it. You haven't seen it. I ordered it. It's going to be 3 more weeks before I get it. It's going to be a long 3 weeks. But we've heard plenty about it already, and we'll get to that in a second. But first, we should probably talk about, you know, the stuff that actually happened these past 2 weeks.
You do realize that your iPhone was obviated by the HTC 8X, right?
We'll agree to disagree on that one.
So HTC has announced its latest offering for Windows Phone, and they're calling it the 8X. It's got a 4.3-inch display. That was the same as the Droid X. That's the one that I remember first being 4.3 inches for some reason. And it looks pretty interesting. I got to say, they've really captured an emotional design to the phone itself.
Yeah, they've really captured Nokia's design for the Lumia 920.
Yeah, they kind of did. They've got the that kind of square with tapered, rounded corners thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, they look very similar. Or to put it another way, it looks exactly like the new iPod Nano.
Yeah, that's right, because Apple stole the... They made a bunch of Nokia mini iPods.
Well, I don't know. The most interesting thing to me here is that Nokia has taken to calling this a Windows Phone flagship device, which Nokia can't be very mad about that. I'm sorry, HTC is calling it a flagship device.
Right, so Nokia can't be too happy about that. They're supposed to be the flagship device, right?
Right, that was kind of their deal.
So, you know, I don't know about that. I guess they're kind of a launch partner. They're launching in early November. So I'm excited to see what Windows Phone 8 has to offer.
Yeah. Well, one thing it'll be offering, which we haven't seen for a while, is Verizon. We haven't seen a whole lot of Windows Phone devices on Verizon, but this one is going to be available on Verizon, as well as a couple other carriers.
Yeah, I mean, the only Windows Phone that was offered on Verizon was the HTC Trophy, which is what I have. And by all rights, it's kind of a cheap little throwaway phone that, you know, maybe they were testing the waters or something. And I think Verizon and HTC both were kind of testing the waters with that device.
Right. And so now you finally got an upgrade path.
Yeah, that's right. And just in time, too, because I just busted the screen on my Trophy.
Oh, no. Is it replaceable?
Yeah, there are kits out there for like $30, so I might
give it a
shot.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
Yeah, definitely have a backup plan, though.
Yeah, it was the stupidest thing ever. You know, I pulled the phone out of my pocket and just kind of gripped it the wrong way and basically threw it four feet in front of me. And it just landed on the concrete on the corner. So what are you going to do?
It's always the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah, that's true. But I just like that I basically, and, you know, and there was somebody walking like right next to me, and I basically just threw my phone on the ground for no apparent reason. They must have thought I was crazy.
Probably, but that's because you are crazy.
Yeah, perhaps. So this 8X is 4.3-inch screen, 720p, 1.5 gigahertz, 1 gig of RAM, 16 gig of storage, NFC, Beats Audio. It's pretty stacked, huh?
Yes, although I'm surprised to hear you include Beats Audio in that description.
Yeah, unless I see otherwise, I'm not so hot on Beats Audio. I'm pretty sure, and I can't really confirm this, but I'm pretty sure they just kind of apply an equalizer and in hardware, and that's all they really do. So I don't know.
It's my understanding that it's less than that, even. It's just base boost. It's
yeah,
base boost.
Yeah. No, no, exactly. Base boost is an equalizer. So, yeah, the both. They do it in hardware at very least. There is some special circuitry that you have to add to it. But I don't know. I'd rather have balanced music than blast the bass out of the music.
Depends on the music.
It does depend on the music. If you're listening to hip hop or something, it kind of makes sense.
You're not a big drum and bass fan.
Oh, yeah, that would be good for drum and bass and electronica, maybe.
No, not electronica, just drum and bass.
All right, well, let's move right along to some Windows 8 news. Dell has unveiled some of its, I guess they must be launch devices, but their Windows 8 strategy. And they've got an Ultrabook and a Fatbook, or I don't know what you call the their 14-inch. No, it's also an Ultrabook. I'm just kidding. And an Optiplex all-in-one. So they're calling these things the Latitude 10, which is a 10-inch Ultrabook with an IPS display. And that's running the next generation Atom chipset. So we'll have to see how that Atom chipset performs, because in the past it's been just dreadful, right?
Yeah, but Intel kind of took like over 2 years to redesign the Intel chipset.
Right.
And it's really aimed directly at Windows devices this time around. So I would imagine at least the improvement will be significant, you know, whether it's going to compete directly with the performance of other processors, I don't know, but it should be better.
Yeah, at least usable, perhaps. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens with that. The next laptop down the line is something I'd be pretty interested in. It's the Latitude 6430U. That's quite the name, isn't it?
Yeah. Are we sure that's an O and not a zero?
Oh yeah, you're right. It's a zero. I got fonted.
So, well, one can never be too sure.
This thing is a 14-inch, and you can go anywhere from a Core i3 to a Core i7, and it's 3.7 pounds. So that seems more interesting to me. That's a real laptop, right?
Yeah. I'm guessing it's only the dual-core Core i7, though.
Yeah, the story doesn't say, so I'm not quite sure of that one.
You got to build a lot more heat management into that quad-core one.
Yeah, I want a 10-core Xeon Ultrabook.
No, you don't. That's last-generation technology.
But it's 10 cores. And the last offering from Dell is the Optiplex 9010. And it's your basic all-in-one computer. There's not, there's no specs in the article that we're sharing along here, but that seems to be the trend with Windows 8, is these all-in-ones. So I don't know if I'm going to ditch my tower over here, but that seems to be the big trend heading into Windows 8 territory.
If you're going to get a Windows 8 all-in-one, my feeling is it better be touchscreen.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be interesting to see if consumers actually want to have a touchscreen on a desk. I'm unsure of that user experience right now.
Yeah, but I don't think Microsoft is. They're going for it.
They are.
Designed a system that works both ways. And so if you're going to get, you know, just a big screen for your desk that's running Windows 8 and nothing else, It ought to be a touchscreen.
I tell you,
Windows 8 is designed for that.
I would take one of those 80-inch screens. You know, the 80-inch touchscreen. I forget the company that makes those things.
Oh, the original multi-touch guys.
Yeah, Microsoft was working with a company that makes these humongous touchscreen devices, and I would love to like hang one of those on my wall, or perhaps even make my wall out of those things.
You just want to go full on Minority Report, don't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, it would justify those you know, pale bald people in the bath in your closet.
All right, so let's move along with HP's offering. Like in the last 2 weeks, we took a week off last week, in case you didn't notice, but in the last 2 weeks, it seems like everybody is unveiling their Windows 8 strategy, and HP has done the same along with Dell here. They've got a 14-inch Ultrabook for $449. That's really aggressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's super aggressive, although this wouldn't be my first choice of Dell laptops, especially since also in the last 2 weeks, the CEO has announced a big push towards premium hardware design. So they're trying to like compete with Apple. They're trying to out-Apple.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they succeed at that.
Yeah, but they're not going to try to do that on their lower-end notebooks. It's all going to be on the high-end.
Right. It's all going to be on the $1,000-plus notebooks, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see all the Windows 8 devices come out. They're also coming out with the HP Envy Phoenix H9, which is a big old gaming desktop. That's more up my alley.
Well, yeah, of course, Chris. It has Beats Audio.
Oh, jeez. you can't run away from the Beats Audio with HP, can you?
No, quite frankly, this thing looks like a Cylon. I mean, it's got red lights everywhere on the front, the sides. It's black and silver, and it's just, it's a Cylon.
It is a Cylon, and hopefully it doesn't kill us all one day.
I suspect it will. I mean, especially with the amount of power in this thing.
And HP and Dell both, when you buy a system from them, all the components fit together really nicely, unlike if you build your own, which I'm a fan of doing. So it's always kind of nice to open up a chassis of one of these things and see how they've arranged the components.
I feel the same is true with Apple.
Yeah, Apple does a lot of design in their laptops. Everything fits together really geniusly.
And in their desktops as well.
Yeah, so... last one here, the Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2. Another compelling name. I guess they kept it simple, right?
Oh, one more piece about HP. They've also released a pair of monitors that are only 11 millimeters thick.
Wow.
Yep.
Off the top of your head, do you know how thick the iPhone is? It's somewhere around there, isn't it?
It's 7.3.
Yeah, so getting pretty close. That's pretty neat.
Yep.
It's starting to make my monitors look just old and awful.
Yeah, maybe you should get some HP monitors.
Yeah,
or maybe you should just get a wall of iPhones, Chris.
I could get a wall of iPhones and then play music through all of them like your tip of the week.
okay, so back to Lenovo. These guys, they're really going heavy on the tablets.
Yeah, I'm loving this. This looks awesome. This is the, like I said, the Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2 with Windows 8. It's going to start at $799 with a keyboard, mind you. It's a 10.1-inch tablet. It's got the typical 1366 by 768 resolution on the display, which that's a little low, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
And 8-megapixel camera, 2-megapixel up front, actual real USB ports. That's what I'm excited about.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I look at these things, and it seems to me that they saw the Microsoft Surface tablets, and Lenovo just said, game on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really excited to get these crop of tablets. And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be. We'll see how they actually perform. You know, you get one of these devices and, you know, maybe they won't be the best. But I'm excited to see some real power out of these kind of things. And so that's going to be a launch device. That's going to be on October 26, right with the release of Windows 8.
Right. Now, independent of Windows 8, we've got a couple of other tablet announcements release. A few weeks ago, we talked about Amazon's new Kindle HD devices. So no surprise here that today we're going to talk about the Nook HD, a 7-inch HD Android-based tablet from Barnes & Noble, and the Nook HD Plus, a 9-inch Android-based HD tablet from Barnes & Noble.
Uh-oh, so they're pushing up into Amazon Fire area there with a 9-inch.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Fire is available in 7 and 9-inch, and now the Nook is available in 7 and 9-inch. But they did manage to out-resolve the Kindle in some aspects. So the 7-inch version is 720p, and then the 9-inch version is 1080p.
Nice. So this is really the only competitor to the current crop of Kindles, isn't it?
The only direct competitor, yeah. They're basically very similar spec-wise.
I mean, there are all kinds of devices out there. Some are e-ink, some are tablets, some run it Android 2.1 or something like that. But these are really the only competitors in the market right now.
Right.
So we can't look at them now. It's going to be on November 1st.
Yeah, just in time for the holiday season.
Just in time. So maybe we'll have a look when these things actually get to shipping out the door.
Right. But one thing we have been able to take a look at least I have while I'm waiting for mine, is the iPhone 5. And we've got a bunch of initial reports about it, as well as my hands-on opinion.
So Josh, also from the DMZ here, was speculating that we missed last week's podcast specifically because you were out getting an iPhone 5. Is that untrue?
Unfortunately, it's untrue. I thought about waiting in line, but I ended up ordering it from AT&T.
So opinions abound. The internet exploded and caught fire with reactions to the iPhone, as is usual. That always happens, doesn't it?
Right. It totally does. People start to go a little crazy about even the sales estimates. But Apple was not shy about it this year. They said, we sold 5 million units the first weekend. And that does not include pre-sales that haven't shipped yet.
So that is the best-selling iPhone weekend ever, right?
It's probably the best-selling phone weekend ever.
Yeah, it probably is for one individual phone. So the stat line is that that is a quarter more than the 4S. But the news is that they actually missed their projections, right? Or we don't know what Apple's projections are, but they missed the market. There was more demand for more phones and they couldn't fill the orders. Is that right?
Well, I certainly know that's true. I mean, because I ordered mine the first weekend and it's going to be 3 weeks until I get it. So their production estimates definitely fell short of the demand. That much we know for sure. I mean, there are people who are going to be waiting months. Although there are also people who could walk into an Apple store today and get one. One gadget site, actually, this is they've done this a couple of times in a row. They actually flew to Australia so that they could be some of the first people in the world to wait in line for an iPhone 5 just to get it and then break it down and take it apart and take pictures and put it on the internet.
Nice. So the site you're talking about is iFixit.
iFixit, as usual. Yeah, they took it apart. And I am really happy with the results that they found. This is basically the most repairable iPhone that's ever been made. And that is pretty contrary to most of the design decisions that we've been seeing from Apple recently.
Yeah, they've been going in the complete opposite direction. This thing looks like you can just kind of break it open and do whatever you want. It looks on the inside, you can kind of see what's going on. There's less interlocking pieces that you have to remove before you get to other pieces and stuff like that.
Right. Well, the important piece here is that the three most likely components to break are the three most easily replaceable pieces. So the screen now comes off directly after two screws and a flap covering the connector cable. And now you can replace it just like that.
The LCD is glued to the glass, so you'll have to replace the whole unit though, right?
True. You still have to replace the whole unit, and that's been true since the iPhone 4. And people were a little bit upset about that for the iPhone 4. But at this point, like the fact that those units are glued together is you're talking about a savings in thickness of like 25% of the phone.
Right, so it's hard to argue
with that. Not to mention, you're not going to get any dust or air bubbles or water between the glass and the LCD. And that's just a design decision that we've got to live with from Apple. But now it doesn't take 45 minutes to an hour to replace that single part. The next most likely part to break is the battery, and that is the second thing that comes out of the phone. Third most likely thing, the home button, and that is connected by two screws, as opposed to previous versions, which had either solder or glue or a laminate of some kind. And that's the third thing to come out.
Yeah, so that's really encouraging. I don't know if this was intentional, that they wanted to appease the repair market or something like that, or if they just happened to build the phone this way. But that's encouraging nonetheless.
This is the first iPhone that I've already ordered, and I don't have it yet, so I'm not sure. But at this point, I'm thinking when it comes to when my 2 years are up and it comes around time to the iPhone 7, I'm not sure I'm going to need the iPhone 7. I think I'll be able to keep this one for a while.
Blasphemy.
No, but it shows you how excited I am about it.
Yeah, this is from the teardown. It looks pretty cool.
Right.
It looks cooler from the teardown than it looked from the announcement.
Furthermore, another company has gone so far as to etch off the A6 chip inside the iPhone with an ion laser, examine it with several different microscopes, and then reverse engineer it. And they have determined that it is far and away the most customized microprocessor that Apple's ever put in any of their devices, that it runs two custom designed cores at up to 1.3 gigahertz, and that it's got three graphics cores and 1 gig of memory.
Yeah, so that's pretty neat.
Yeah, all that is way nerdier than Apple ever wants you to go into their phones.
That's right.
but it's all good stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting because all the Android manufacturers basically use off-the-shelf components, and it looks like,
right.
Who was it, PA Semi? Was that the guys that Apple?
That was the semiconductor design company that Apple bought, and its knowledgeable sources can see their fingerprints all over this chip.
Yeah, so I wonder if this is the first time we're really seeing an impact from those guys.
It is. It basically is. Analysts have gone so far as to say that much.
But can it do maps, Taylor?
Well, yeah, it can do maps. I've been playing with maps on iOS 6 just on the iPhone 4. And on my phone, it does not have turn-by-turn directions. But on the 4S and the 5, it does. It doesn't have the 3D flyover view on the 4S and the 5, it does. But still, I think it's pretty good. I think from an aesthetic experience perspective, it is much nicer than the old maps from iOS 5.
So from a pure user experience perspective, you think the software behind the maps is really good, but
And again, I said from an aesthetic
right.
user experience perspective.
Now, what about...
But it turns out the data included in the maps is total junk.
So I'm curious of what your experience is, because you're pretty close to a city. Do they at least have the city data knocked down?
I have not found any problems whatsoever in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, so I wonder if a lot of that is you know, the majority of the rest of the country and elsewhere not having data on their location.
It does seem to be mostly elsewhere. There is a great Tumblr blog that's already been put up cataloging the absurd errors of the iOS 6 mapping data. And most of the results come from Europe and Australia, but a lot of those results do come from major cities.
Yeah, so I bet you they'll just kind of solve this over time, right? I got to imagine.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people have already been asking me, like, when is it going to be solved? Like a week from now, a month, a year? But it's a gradual process. These are maps which need to be updated over time. Google is constantly updating their maps with new information, new business listings, new satellite images. And it's a process that happens over time. And, Apple is going to do it the same way that Google does it.
Yeah, and I just got to think, Google's got time under its belt. They've been doing this for a long time now, and they've been throwing money at ways to automate this and that kind of thing. So I got a question.
Yeah, they've been throwing a lot of money at maps.
I got to question what Apple is up to and why they wouldn't just keep the best data provider out there, and that's Google. There's no question. That's going to be Google for like 5 years or something like that to make up a number.
Well, a lot of people are asking that question, and they've been asking Google that question. They say, when are you going to come out with an iOS app of your own maps? And for the most part, they have been coy. There are rumors that they've been working on it for some time. There are other rumors that say it won't be ready for some time longer, but they haven't said anything of the sort.
Yeah, and there were even rumors that they had already submitted to the App Store, which if there's ever an Apple user on the internet and they wish for something, there is a story written about it somewhere.
Yeah, but I don't think it's true. I don't think they've already submitted
yeah,
the app.
Yeah. But they gotta work on that, because if they release it again, I think everybody's going to go install it, and if they're missing out on a big opportunity the longer they wait to release that app.
Yeah. But other than apps, iOS 6 has been pretty great. The only other problem that I have is actually in podcasts. Now, we talked about before, Apple has their own downloadable podcasts app, which is full of bugs, and they're working those out, and it's getting better as they release new versions. But previously, you could access your podcasts via the iPod apps,
right.
And now they've removed it completely. So I can only get my podcasts from the buggy podcast app, which is less buggy, but still annoying.
Yeah, that's a little irritating. Well, I mean, you could go get Pocket Casts,
Oh, yeah, sure. Or Downcast, or there's plenty of other apps. But I like having it synced with iTunes.
Yeah. So what struck me in everybody's reaction to the iPhone was the pure amount of information about the maps. I mean, it's incredible how much was written about this. I mean, okay, they're maps. Move along.
Yeah, it's true, and I haven't had any problems with it, but people won't even download the update anymore. They don't want to touch it. They say, oh, I heard the maps is so buggy, you can't... I mean, it's gone viral. It's become a meme or something.
So what else do we have? We've got iPhone 5 Wi-Fi issues. That seems like a pretty big deal.
Well, it was a big deal on launch day, and it's getting better over time. And it's not full like Wi-Fi loss of signal. It's just it's having more trouble staying connected than previous software did. I think part of this is because, at least for the 4S and the 5, there is a new invisible software element that allows the phone to choose automatically between 3G, 4G, and Wi-Fi. About whichever is the fastest connection. So I suspect that there are some bugs in there that are preventing people from staying connected to Wi-Fi.
Interesting. So actually, this is something about Windows Phone that bugs me to no end. And I don't know if there's a configuration that I could set, but whenever the phone goes to sleep, it loses the Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah, I haven't had that problem.
Yeah, and then the podcast won't download. So anyway, I'll have to look into my own problems there.
That's a bummer. Well, anyway, a big bummer for people who ordered the black iPhone 5 is that it's scratching. And this has become such a big deal to some people that they're calling it Scratchgate. Some people are even calling it AntennaGate 2. So the black iPhone 5, it actually is two colors. It's got black glass on it and then slate gray aluminum, and it's anodized aluminum. If you scratch that aluminum, you can see regular aluminum color underneath it. And people were pretty upset about that. Some people are reporting that it was scratched right out of the box. And someone went so far as to email Apple about it. And Phil Schiller responded in the way Steve Jobs used to do. And he said, it's aluminum. It gets scratched. Aluminum is silver colored.
Yeah, and I got to wonder about that because, yeah, I understand it's aluminum. And you remember how the old iPhone 2Gs with the silver backs got scratched like none other.
I think that probably the most scratch susceptible iPhone was the black 3G and 3GS.
It was the 3G maybe? Maybe I'm thinking of the 3G.
Maybe, but that was black plastic, not aluminum back.
Okay. Well, I saw a lot of... No, I'm pretty sure they were 2Gs, and they were all scratched.
Okay, sure. It's definitely going to be more scratching than the glass back.
Anyway, I guess you got to question their decision for that material on that phone in that color. If they had varied any one of those variables, then it wouldn't be an issue, right?
Well, that's one of several reasons why I ordered a white iPhone 5.
Yeah, there you go. Smart. So even if it does scratch, you don't notice it as much.
Right. And also, the glass is more durable on the white version.
All right, so maybe our last iPhone reaction here. The Netflix app was updated to support the 16:9 screen, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it just surprised me that it took them about a week to do it. But definitely, if you're watching Netflix on your phone, you want to have the full screen resolution. That is one place where you want it above all else.
Yeah, definitely so. So even if it took them a week, that's really good to see.
Totally. All right, well, should we turn on our afterburners?
Please do. You got the first one.
All right. OS 10 Mountain Lion 10.8.2 is finally out. It's got Facebook integrations. iMessage finally lets you connect your computer to your phone number so that all of your iMessages show up in both places, which is really great, although still working out a couple of bugs on that. Finally, as we reported before, the battery life is finally back to Lion, or in some cases even Snow Leopard levels. So battery life is about as good as it's ever been on Mac laptops running the latest software.
Cool, that's good to see. So the quad-core Samsung Galaxy Note 2 is going to be launching on 5 carriers in mid-November. So if you like giant phones and quad cores, you're in luck.
Totally. Finally, we wanted to report the announcement of new Fitbits. These ones are running Bluetooth and can charge wirelessly. The Fitbit is a great little device for you to track your fitness and track your steps and your heart rate and stuff. And this is definitely a major improvement in terms of usability.
So let's
turn
that
off. We should turn off the afterburners.
Yes, turn off the afterburners, and let's get into the end user stories. And you have an experience to share with us. What do you got?
Okay. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this app called Cedio. I thought this was really cool because it can turn multiple iPhones into speakers playing the same song, and I thought this was so awesome that. Over these past few weeks, I managed to get 6 iPhone users to all try it at the same time.
Wow. And how'd it work?
It worked great. We had at least 5 of the 6 playing the same music at the same time. It works. You can create an ad hoc Wi-Fi network, but it works better and with more phones if you use an existing Wi-Fi network. So if you're in a place without available Wi-Fi, it gets a little bit trickier, or if the Wi-Fi signal is weak, then it's tricky too. But mostly it worked great. I mean, for the large majority of the time that we were using it, we had music that was at a sound level that we would not have had otherwise. I also learned that the iPhone 4S has a much louder speaker than the iPhone 4.
So what was the 6th iPhone doing, Taylor?
Was
it rolling the others?
No, it's sort of complicated to set it up, and one of the guys was not really understanding how it worked. I mean, it wasn't the same person the whole time. It was just somebody was behind.
So
either that or looking through their playlist trying to pick the next song.
What I want to see is, you remember that hack a little while back where you just put the iPhone in, or a phone of any kind, into a glass and it'll amplify the sound?
Oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah, you should do that with 5 of them.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea. We were using the glasses, though, for drinks.
Right, right. So that would be pretty cool. But yeah, if they're already filled with drinks, then I guess not.
Not so cool.
Not so cool. Because your iPhone would drown. That's no good.
Okay, so I have one more experience to share. And this happened courtesy of thewirecutter.com. It's this great gadget recommendation site that you should check out if you've never seen it before. And it's run by Brian Lamb. And
that's the old Gizmodo editor, right?
Yeah. And I noticed a strange thing. They have these Amazon links, and they're an affiliate. So if you click the Amazon link and buy something through their link, they get a percentage off of the Amazon sale. But all of their Amazon links were redirecting me to Amazon Canada. I thought, huh, that's really strange.
That is weird.
So I asked them through Twitter about why that would be the case, and they said, oh, yeah, that is really strange. And so I gave them some details of my setup, and they said, your Fios internet speed is so fast through Verizon that our website must automatically assume that you're in Canada and not the U.S.
So forget the location of the IP address. That's too fast. They must be lying.
Right.
He must be in Canada.
He must be lying about his IP. He must be in Canada.
Yeah, why are you using a proxy?
I'm not. Maybe somebody else is.
See, and we do the show over Skype, so I have no idea if you moved to Canada and didn't tell me.
Well, I thought it was very strange, and it was something that I had only noticed had popped up once I switched to Fios. So I thought it was worth mentioning, and he said he'll look into it.
Interesting. So you got some green tech for us? You got some double green tech for us?
I do.
Triple?
Two very different
stories
this week. The first is from Sweden. Now, Sweden is very green. They are very proud of the fact that they are able to recycle or reuse 96% of all household waste in the entire country.
Wow, that is impressive.
Right. So if it's burnable, they use it for heat and electricity and hot water. And if it's recyclable, they recycle it. So they've decided, we're so good at this, let's solicit trash from other countries because we'll use it better than they can.
So they can actually take other people's trash and then use it effectively to
their advantage. And they'll get paid
stuff
for
like that.
They'll get paid for it as well because other countries pay to export their trash.
Yeah, that's right, because they don't know how to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah, very interesting. I know over there in Europe in general, they're a long way away from the U.S. in recycling, meaning in the positive direction, they're a long way away. So Sweden is one of the best, and that's really kind of crazy that they can just go out there and take other people's trash.
But there's not a whole lot about Sweden that makes them so much better at recycling and reusing trash than anybody else. I mean, so imagine if the whole world had a 96% recycling rate.
Yeah, things would be a little bit different, I'd imagine.
Well, not for me. That's my personal recycling rate. No, I haven't tracked my personal recycling rate.
Yeah, I bet you it's not 96%. That's a lot.
That's pretty high, yeah. You need municipal level programs in order to get it that high.
I know in Germany, when I was there for a little bit doing an internship, they had all kinds of recycling programs, and particularly for like the beer bottles, and they had, you know, organic trash separated from the recycling and from the trash and all that. And, here we're pretty much just kind of free market about it, and some places give financial incentives, and, you know, sometimes that works, maybe not, but it's cool to see. I didn't know that 96 was even achievable, to be quite honest.
Well, in certain municipalities in the U.S., in San Francisco, for example, they have five different types of recycling. So they have five different bins. There's metal, glass, plastic, paper, and compost. But here in D.C., we only have single-stream recycling.
Yeah, we have trash and recycling, that's it.
Right, which is the least effective type of recycling. But anyway, enough about recycling. Now I want to talk about solar panels, or should I say solar windows?
Yeah, they are. They're not solar panels.
Yeah, so Sharp just announced available on the market see-through solar panels. Now, they're not completely see-through. They're a little bit translucent. Okay, more than translucent, you know. But still, it lets light through, but then also converts light with a power convergency rate of 6.8%. They're initially marketing these towards hotels that want to be greener and generate more energy. But anybody could use this who's looking for a window where you don't necessarily want to see through it. You just want to let light through it, but then also absorb light and turn it into electricity.
Yeah, it's really neat. And, you know, the idea of having kind of a diffuse indirect light coming through something is something that that is desirable in the household anyway.
And yeah, because it offers privacy.
Right. It offers a little bit of privacy. And, you know, the light from, you know, you don't get the sun glaring in your eyes. The light coming through a panel diffusely like that is just nicer, I think. And if you can generate power from it, all the better.
Totally. So that's pretty exciting. I've read about stuff like this before, but the fact is it's available for purchase now.
Nice. So how long until your phone screen charges your phone? That's what I want.
Good question. I mean, right now the thinnest panel size that you can get is thicker than my entire phone. Not by much, but thicker.
Right.
And then you have to have transformers to convert the energy, and you don't get a whole lot of power out of just a few square inches that are on the phone, but I'd say it's coming eventually.
Yeah. One day.
5 years.
Years away.
Isn't that what everyone says? Five years?
It's because it's as far away as the next funding cycle, and that's usually 5 years. So, so yeah, I mean, if you could wrap a cell phone in this kind of technology, that would be really, you wouldn't have to charge your phone for a week. That would be excellent.
Right.
So anyway, enough speculation. That's pretty far off as far as 5 years, I've been told. We have a tip of the week right now, though. And as usual, you're the one on top of the tip of the week. So what's going on?
Well, I wanted to bring it back to the iPhone and iOS 6. And there's this new feature, which probably a lot of people haven't found yet because it's buried in the settings. But it's a do not disturb feature. And it makes a whole lot of sense at first blush. It turns off all the notifications on your phone.
Nice. That's awesome. And you can set the right times?
Yeah, that's the other cool thing. You can set the time, and then you can set it granularly within that. So if the screen is already on, you're still going to get the notifications. It's not disturbing you. You're already using your phone.
That's a nice touch.
And if the screen is off, you can set a do not disturb block every week. So, you know, I set it for when I'm sleeping. But then you can set a couple of other options. Now, if someone calls you twice within 3 minutes, then it will ring the second time, right? So if it's an emergency. Furthermore, if you want to, if you don't want some random person calling you within 3 minutes, you can set it to only your contacts.
Oh, nice. It sounds like a well-thought-out feature.
Yeah.
Now it's not do not disturb, but I was always enthused by the Google Voice block and the way that works. If you block someone, like a telemarketer or something on Google Voice, and they call you back, they get the message that the phone number is no longer in existence.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's sneaky.
Slick, right?
Yeah. But you can also set do not disturb through Google Voice, can't you?
Yeah, I think you can. I've never done it, but I'm pretty sure you can.
Yeah.
I'd have to go look at the settings.
They should definitely have features at least this complex, if not more complex.
Yeah, no, I just use the block feature a lot when I get spam calls and stuff like that.
Right. Well, that's my tip of the week. And I guess the most important thing here is that I set up the do not disturb block on my phone. But the thing is, it should really affect your behavior. You know, it should affect my friend's behavior. I mean, like, now you know, Chris, but not everybody else knows yet, that if you try to call me after 2 a.m., it's not going to get through. But if you call me again, then it'll get through.
Right. So I will make sure next time.
To always call me twice after 2 a.m.
After 2 a.m.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes.
So that's it. I just wanted to point that out, that it affects other people's behavior as much as it affects my phone's behavior. And now, finally, I've got a kicker this week, which is about beer.
Yes.
And also atomic bombs.
Wow. That's not so great.
I don't know. I think it's pretty awesome under the right context. So this actually comes from a 1955 report by the Atomic Energy Commission. When America was doing all of these nuclear bomb tests in the desert in Nevada, they decided to figure out what foods were what foods could survive fallout from a nuclear explosion. And they specifically tested.
I see where you're going with this.
All the different kinds of beer that they could find, and they found that all the beer survived.
I mean, rejoice.
unless the bottle is destroyed, like if the bottle is intact, the beer is good. And that's generally true of, not necessarily wines, because natural cork wines had a few problems. Mostly they were okay, but sometimes not so okay. Any commercially bottled beverage without a natural cork is fine.
Interesting. So what makes that the case? Do they know, was it the manner in which it sealed?
Basically, I mean, it's just that nuclear radiation isn't able to penetrate a commercially sealed container.
Interesting. So, like they said in the article here, rest assured your cans of PBR and Bud Light are safe. Although I bet, Taylor, you would not agree with that. They are not safe.
I would say they're never safe.
Because
not
Taylor
safe.
Will throw them at your face.
Empty, though.
Yeah. No, you don't want to be mean.
Right.
So I love the name of this. It's called Operation Teapot. That's excellent.
Yep. It's pretty good. Although there were no teapots in the operation.
No teapots involved.
All the stories I got this week.
We've regressed into talking about nuclear beer, so I think it's time to get out of here for the week, don't you think?
Right.
So if you were
show title.
Nuclear beer, yeah. So if you were to try to contact me, your best bet would be on Twitter. I am at Chris Hale Barnes. Taylor, how could somebody get a hold of you?
Chris, we've been over this. They'd have to run very, very fast.
Would they need a net?
I guess, you know, one of those like ninja nets that like trap you and you can't get out somehow. I don't understand why people can't get out of nets, but I guess they have special nets that people can't get out of. So one of those would probably work.
Or they can lure you in with a nuclear beer.
If they exist. Well, this non-nuclear beer would be preferable.
That should be your Twitter handle.
All right. So a beer and a snare. That's a good way to get a hold.
Okay.
Another good way is my Twitter handle. That's @TaylorPhone.
All right, there we go. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes with the links to all the stories we talked about at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THEND USR. DMZ has a few other podcasts, so have a look at Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and, of course, the Movie Podcast. You can send us some feedback at theendusers@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can ping us both on Twitter with our Twitter handles, or at theendusers, both of us. You can join us live as we record the show every Thursday night at around 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Moore.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
You know, unless it's a craft beer, I'm probably not going to go for it.